CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Sailing the Graveyard Sea, the new book from Richard Snow, The Deathly Voyage of the Summers, the U.S. Navy's only mutiny and the trial that gripped the nation. It is Friday, the 24th of November. A man named Wales is approached by Philip Spencer, the 18-year-old daydreamer, who has notions of being a pirate, just like the pirate's own book that he read when he was in college. And he tells Wales, "Are you going to join us?" And he explains the plot. Richard, what is the plot as we understand it now, 180 years later?
Well, he says to Wales, "Hey, come with me. Come up here." And this tiny ship has only one place of real privacy, which looks like a wood pile. It's these spare spars all stacked in the middle of the deck, and they crawl up on top of them. And then Philip Spencer says that he's got at least 20 people on the ship recruited for his plan. They're going to be a great pirate ship. They can outgun anything half their size. They can outrun anything they have to. And we'll swing the guns around. We'll get the whole crew on deck at gunpoint. Then we'll decide which ones we need. The others will go overboard. A lot of useless mouths to feed, too many children. And then we'll go sailing and become rich. Big ships. Are you with me? I'm going to make you one of my officers. And Wales believes this. And out of sheer self-preservation says, "Oh, yes, that's a great idea, Phil." And then wastes through a miserable night to run and tell the captain. And he can't get at the captain, but he goes to the first lieutenant, Ganzevoort, and tells him the whole story. And Ganzevoort, of course, directly goes to Captain Mackenzie and says, What's up? And for a very little while, and for the only time, Mackenzie behaves like a rational grown-up. He says, "This is ridiculous. What? This twerp is going to have the ship rise up against me? But he must be amusing himself with pirate stories." He even said that.
A detail. Who is Ganzevoort at this point? The lieutenant. What do we need?
He's the second in command, the lieutenant. And he's also, as we mentioned earlier, Herman Melville's first cousin, who convinced Herman Melville to go to sea and see what he found there. And but then it really only seems to be a matter of a few hours, the captain gets more and more frightened and more convinced. And he sets Ganzevoort out to follow Spencer around and see what he's doing and spy on him, which isn't something that's easy to do on something the size of a city bus. And he begins to panic. And of course, a panicky captain will not have a lot of trouble passing that along to any of his subordinates.
Here's a detail, Richard, that struck me. On reading sailing ships over the years, a captain is God, all powerful. What a captain says must happen. You don't have a choice. You can't say no to a captain. Ganzevoort knows this, so he tells the captain. And the captain doesn't hesitate. He makes rules on the basis of what is best for the service right then. Mackenzie doesn't do that. He holds back. He almost broods. And there's some time before he has Spencer brought to him. It's almost a delay, as if he's, as you say, he's going from being an adult to getting caught up in this fantasy. There's nothing that supports the fantasy to see. It's a little bitty ship. You can walk the whole thing in a couple of minutes. So when Mackenzie has Spencer brought to him. This is the 25th on a Saturday. What is the exchange like? This is Mackenzie's point of view, because that's the record we have.
Mackenzie coming out in the open with it now. It's been a couple of days, and he says, Mr. Spencer, sir, I understand that you desire to have command of this ship. Oh, no, sir. I understand that you have told people that you were going to take over the ship. Well, maybe I did, but that was just a joke. And the captain forecast the future right there, is saying, well, it's not a fit subject for joking. That is a joke that will cost you, could cost you your life. And he has him put in the irons. And from that moment on, he is always suspicious of everyone. He soon has two other sailors.
Yes, let's go to bosun's mate, Cromwell. Is the captain suspicious of Cromwell and also Smalls? Why is he suspicious? Those two men, what singles them out? Because Spencer doesn't...
Cromwell is the toughest guy on the ship. And he sails very close to the wind with his captain. He's going to be very rude to him. He's abrasive. Nobody likes him. He shrieks at everybody. He's a good bosun's mate in that he can scare you into doing what you want, what he wants you to. But even the officers are nervous about him. So that may have had something to do with why he was picked. And Small is mysterious. He was popular. Everybody liked him. He was small. He was the shortest person on the ship. So he wasn't a very imposing or frightening figure. And looking back on it, I wonder if the reason that those two were chosen are that they were the only men on the ship who knew navigation. That they and they alone could have, if they had the ship and no officers on it, could have sailed somewhere that they wanted to.
The Isle of Pines.
Anyway, they're both arrested and put in chains too.
All right. On the Sunday, we've got three men in irons now on the deck because there's no place else to put them. It's a flush deck ship. The captain and the officers do the best they can going below deck. Aft, the boys are all in a very narrow space under. There's a narrow deck about 4 feet high underneath the main deck. It's very crowded all the time. The whole story of why the captain becomes suspicious and increasingly what we would use the word paranoid, it doesn't make sense to read all this time later, except for what you discovered from the publisher Bennett of the Herald. I mean, after the ship lands again in New York and we begin the investigation, it was a moment of insanity, collective insanity. Does that make sense to you, Richard?
Very much so. It seems like a paranoia, but the extreme paranoia that spills over into hysteria. I simply think that people once they got the idea that on this bizarre crew of kids were somehow going to band together and their captain was clearly by now believing it. Gansevoort, all the officers had been patrolling all night fully armed, which, you know, they're carrying 40 pounds of equipment and it gets tiring. I mean, so people are tired, they're nervous, and the captain is beginning to say in all of his accounts that he can recognize what's happening, but by the terrible glare people are giving one another. Well, there he's coming right back to poor wall-eyed Philip Spencer and reading everything in scary looks. I mean, he's sure enough about that as a barometer to put it in his official reports. So everybody's a little crazy.
Now Mackenzie does something that's both clever and suspicious. He doesn't make decisions. He asks his wardroom to make decisions, quite separate from him. And all of the officers, Gansevoort, the acting master, all of them, young and old, gather together and hold what appears to be a corpse martial, but it's not. It's an investigation with the weight of the captain, and they call in the crew, And the crew doesn't understand what's going on, so they make negative remarks about Cromwell, Small, not much about Spencer because they don't care that much about him, but Cromwell and Small were part of the crew.
And they're also pretty sure that this is what their captain wants.
Yes. You make the very careful point. No one but the Navy has a right to call a court-martial. The captain doesn't. That's not his authority. And so it's like a court-martial, but it's not. And then they deliver a verdict. What do they tell the captain they've decided?
That for the safety of the vessel, Spencer, Small, and Cromwell have to die. They're near the Virgin Islands now. They're a few hours from fortified land, but it's come full cycle. The captain has gotten the verdict that he was clearly looking for, and they're going to act on it.
The book is Sailing the Graveyard Sea, The Deathly Voyage of the Summers and the U.S. Navy's Only Mutiny and the Trial That Gripped the Nation, Richard Snow. We're going to break off here because the last days and the last hours are tragic, but at the same time remain mysterious 180 years later. What did the captain know? What did the crew know? What did the officers know? What did the victims know? And we're going to go to New York, January, February, March, ending in April 1st, two different inquiries about these events that are still debated. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.